Bobby Rivers, alone in a world that doesn't want him. We can rebuild him, make him better than he was before. Better, stronger, blacker. Mocha.
Mocha, man of a certain hue and age. That's what the letters stand for. Bobby Rivers here. I'm so glad you decided to lend an ear and listen to what we've got to talk about. I am here, as always, with Keith Price. How are you doing?
Hello. How you been?
I'm so glad to have you here. And I have to tell you something. You know, because of the politics lately has just been sometimes just the constant news just wears you down. And you need something to lift your spirits, right?
Right.
So I went old school. I said, I just want some music entertainment. And I went to Netflix. Do you know what I watched? And I went, dang, I know these are old, but I really miss this kind of entertainment on television. I watched the first two Barbra Streisand specials.
Oh, wow.
You know,
you kicked it way old school.
I did. But here was the thing. Because we don't, if you look at entertainment now, I mean, we're no longer in the days of a great variety show like the Carol Burnett Show.
Right.
Where you had costumes and a studio orchestra. She had dancers.
Well, they had full musical numbers. They didn't mess around.
Musical numbers, everything. We also had music variety specials. Nowadays, we have everything's an audition. You know, you think about, okay, America's Got Talent or The Voice or whatever, they're all basically auditions. Barbra Streisand is this new hot Broadway star, Funny Girls on Broadway, and she starts doing specials for CBS. This is before the movie version of Funny Girl and then after the movie version of Funny Girl. And the first one, you go, girl, it is just you. You and the musicians, and you are killing it. So much talent and confidence. And she said, okay, you know what? You may not think I'm gorgeous. I look fine to me.
And I can sing, bitches. Pow.
Pow. And the thing, and I noticed this with the last special that she did, but she's looking back on her entire career, mm-hmm. but there is something, this is one thing that I love about LaBabs, about Streisand, that you could hear her on the record. You could hear her, here's an example. You could hear her sing People on the original cast album. And then she had the hit pop album where she sang a number of songs and People was on there. And that rendition was what was a big hit on radio. But it wasn't the same. I mean, it was like different phrasing. And then the movie version, which is my favorite. When Barbra Streisand sang for you, you had to be there. You didn't get the exact thing that you heard on the vinyl.
Right.
She gave you fresh and new and informed. And, you know, if you just want to see what TV was like back in the day. You know, nowadays we get The Bachelorette for 2 hours. 1 hour of Barbra Streisand. You know, My Name is Barbra. The first one is, oh God, those were, just watch. I really miss that kind of entertainment. So I watched that. Mm. And then I watched W. Kamau Bell, Prep School.
I saw that set. That man is
first of all
hilarious.
Let me tell you this. Before we go into that Netflix show, if you're not watching United Shades, his show on CNN, mm-hmm. it is a must see. That is a show that the White House needs to be watching because it gets into the stuff parts of America you didn't realize or think about. It's so informative and so compassionate. And so important, I think, today. So that's United Shades. And I'm watching Prep School Negro. he did this part about, because his wife, His wife is white.
Uh-huh.
And my sister, you know this, my sister-in-law is white.
Right.
So, which is sometimes odd because I'm an uncle. I've got two nephews who have a white mom. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I know y'all are black, but why is your daddy letting you wear Crocs?
Oh no!
And eat frozen yogurt.
Oh no, Larry. No, Bobby, no. Please tell me no, it's not happening, no.
But this is why you got black Uncle Bobby.
You gotta take them Crocs off.
If I'm allowed into the house. And he started talking about camping.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, black folks. That's usually not something we like to do. Go camp.
No,
did
honey.
You ever go camping?
Hell no. What? Right. Honey, I grew up in Texas. You're not taking me no place in the desert, some abandoned space with nothing but trees? Oh, no, honey.
Okay. Well, oh, bring no. To my point, because I know that feeling. I was growing up in South Central LA. And I was in the third grade. Already by the third grade, thanks to the Million Dollar Movie, which would show the same movie at the same time every weeknight for a week, mm-hmm. and then twice on Saturday and twice on Sunday. So by the time I was in the third grade, I could do all of Gwen Verdon's dialogue and songs from the movie Damn Yankees, which, of course, concerned my parents.
Which, you know, now there's a camp for that.
At that time, however, there wasn't. My sister, of course, thought, well, this is cool.
There's a camp for that. Oh, my God. Little Johnny wants to sing show tunes. It's good. We have a camp for that.
Right. So it's summer vacation. And my mother says, you know, would you like to go to camp? You know, go away to camp. I said, no. Because, no. She said, well,
I'm good.
And it's still there. The Watts Willowbrook, it was then the Watts Willowbrook Boys Club. Now it's the Boys and Girls Club. You would be in the mountain for 8 days. Don't you want to go to the San Bernardino Mountains for 8 days? And I said, is there your own bath? Do you have your own bathroom? Well, no. I said, okay, no. No. I don't want to sleep outside. I want my own private. No, I don't want to be sharing a bathroom.
I don't do that.
I don't do that. No, but it's so funny to be out there. So I just kept saying, no. It's the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I can see movies in the daytime. No, I want to sit here in front of the TV with a glass of Hawaiian punch and hear clang, clang, clang with the trolley. I want to be home and watch the musicals. I want to see Judy. I want to see Fred dance with Ginger. That's it. So I kept saying no. And then my mom told my dad, okay, you get him to say yes. And my dad said, why don't you make your mother happy and go to camp? Because I don't want to go to camp. Okay.
I don't care about her happiness.
I don't care. Yeah, that was it. I don't care about your happiness.
I love you, Mom, but go to hell.
I want to hear a clown song.
Let me tell you, whatever Bobby wants.
They kept on me. So I said, okay, I'll go. So there I'm on this long-ass bus ride.
Ugh.
We get up to the San Bernardino Mountains. And I'm going to be gone for 8 days. Leaving my little sister at home. I hate it. I just hated it. Because I don't want to be sleeping outside. Don't you want to sleep under the stars?
No.
Not unless they're Tyrone Power and Clark Gable.
Oh, hey. And that's why Bobby was never asked back to camp.
And that's
no. Or literally, that was when camp was born.
So I would just say where they had like a workshop, you know, where I discovered like Plaster of Paris. Ugh. And I just heard, what's that, Robert? It's a bud vase. Oh, I don't think.
I'm trying to make an Oscar out of paper mache.
Why doesn't anybody get this?
Okay. One day they will call this the Antoinette Perry Award.
So, 8 days later, get on the bus for the 2-hour ride back down to South Central LA. We get there. You know, the parents are cheering. The buses pull in on time. Everybody's there. My parents forgot to come get me. To this day, my sister says, if you really know my brother, that explains everything about why he is the way he is. It was over an hour. I'm sitting on this little suitcase that they gave me, and I had a sleeping bag, and I had to like take a parka because it's up in the goddamn woods, you know, the mountains, right? An hour. The counselor from the boys club said, do you want to like, use the phone? I went, I've got no money on me. I've been in the mountains. They gave me a dime, and my sister was home with my Aunt Flora. And she said, Mom and Dad went to look at furniture. So apparently, what happened was, my parents are way the heck out on Wilshire Boulevard at a furniture store because my mom got in here and she went to look at new furniture. And then at some point, they became like the mother in Home Alone. They both looked at each other and went, Bobby!
Driving up, and then you just sitting there with a pout.
Oh.
Made me spend 8 days up in that damn mountain. It's like, do you know no one knows who Judy Garland is?
I thought because my sister, it's my Aunt Flora, and she didn't know exactly where they were. Mm-hmm. So I went, I'm walking home. Wow. And keep in mind, this is the summer in Los Angeles.
With all of this stuff on your back.
I'm holding a suitcase. I put the sleeping bag over, you know, onto my back, and I wore the little parka jacket. And I look like the littlest hobo.
It's a little runaway.
Well, I'm sweating, and I know people are staring at me. What the hell? It's like, what is that, Gandhi? I'm like the character out of the comic strip. I'm walking and sweating. Sweating and walking. I get out, and somewhere along the way, my parents got to the boys' club, and they said, well, he left. He'd been here for an hour. And it must have been at that moment where my parents got in the car and said, okay, the thing to do is when we get in the house, make him feel like Ingrid Bergman in Gaslight. Basically, blame this on him.
We came looking for you and you weren't there.
That's exactly what they did. Exactly. Where were you? Well, I've been gone for 8 days.
And 1 hour.
Not anybody at the dinner table. And an hour, I walked home. Why did you wait? I've been waiting for 8 days and 1 hour.
Bobby.
This is a hand on a Bible, hand on the grave of Judy Garland, true story.
So sad.
And Bobby never went back to camp again.
No.
Oh. Or this is when Bobby sought alternative meanings to the word camp.
And when I turned 13, my 13th birthday, Mom said, you can have anything you want as a birthday present. What do you want? I want the 2 record set, Judy Garland at Carnegie Hall. Mom, yeah, but camp? The San Bernardino Mountains? Okay, I'll get it for you.
You use that like, Shady Pines, Ma, Shady Pines.
Oh.
Slowly I turn.
So, W. Kamau Bell brought up camp and Prep School Negro currently on Netflix.
Oh, my
God. Oh, man, I was.
He's so folks, so funny.
If you get Netflix, look at that and take a trip down memory lane. Or if you want to see a great artist, when she was new, and of course, I think she was always at her peak.
Mm-hmm.
The Barbara Streisand specials are now on Netflix.
We'll see. I'm glad you brought that up, because you know what else is on Netflix that I'm loving me some right now? The what? Fact that you can now get Happen Leonard seasons 1-3 on Netflix.
Man, and then you can understand. I love you really, folks, binge watch it.
Yes.
Or just watch it, period. It's what Michael K. Williams, James Purefoy, Doug Griffin.
Come on.
Excellent writing, excellent acting, and with something that you rarely see in film and TV done dramatically, it focuses on the friendship of a straight male and his gay best friend. The straight male is the white guy, and the black man, the tough Vietnam veteran, is the gay guy.
Mm-hmm.
Michael K. Williams. And Keith had a really, I think it's a wise point about, because I kept saying, look, it's Michael K. Williams, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Who needs to do this show, by the way? Just FYI if he's listening. Hi, Michael. Hey. We love you and stuff. You're so tough and everything.
We mentioned this in previous episodes, that this is the third time that he has played a gay character. He was a gay character on The Wire, which was critically acclaimed on HBO. And then there was a mini documentary about the early days of gay liberation in San Francisco. And it was and When We Rise, I think that was the name of it. Mm-hmm. And he played a real life gay character in that. And then he's a gay character in Happen Leonard. So I said, you know, glad, not that I've ever been invited to a glad dinner to sit down and have the veal Prince Orloff or whatever they serve. You know,
it's mostly finger actor, foods these days now. The receptions they're not so fancy no more. Not so sit-down-z.
But if a straight actor does a guest role in a half-hour episode playing a gay character for 10 minutes, he'll get an award from GLAAD for bringing new light to gay images or something. And I went, Michael K. Williams should be getting a special honor, because we can remember back in the day, black actors who were getting work would not play openly gay characters.
Hell no. Whatever happened to that guy in Raymond, is that you? Wherever he went.
We ain't seen him since.
Norman, is that you?
No. Norman, is that you? We did see him.
What?
Oh, no. He survived. He was a regular on Hill Street Blues. That was Michael Warren.
Right. That's right. But, you know, they don't talk about that movie much.
No. Unless they're on my show. Because he was one of my guests on VH1.
I brought
it up, and he just made this sound. He said, I should have known you'd seen it.
Of course. It had Red Fox in it. Of course we saw it.
But you know, finish up and tell them what you were going to say about Happen Leonard.
Well.
About how if James Purefoy had played a gay character instead of Michael K. Williams.
Well, I think that, again, if that series had been written in a way that they could have gotten away with making Leonard be Hap and Hap be Leonard, per se, in terms of the way that the actors looked and the way that they were described, they would have done it, and James Purefoy would have been held as a much more interesting gay character to have. Because, at least, you know, he's brave enough to play something so against type and so different. And, you know, and again, no tea, no shade to GLAAD, per se, but they tend to be, they gravitate towards what's necessarily the shiniest of gay things. And
like this year, they're honoring Ross Matthews.
Exactly. Ross Matthews, you're a delight. You're a wonderful human being. Shout out to you. But when you think about how Ross Matthews is viewed through the media, I'm trying to find a nice way to say it because I don't want to be shady, but how he's viewed through the media, that's a much more acceptable image, especially now in this day of the Trump, you know, everybody's a kind of a bully kind of way. That's a much more acceptable way of them looking at gay people and being able to still feel a sense of distance. I'm not saying that he's not a, I'm not talking about how if he's a good or a bad person. I think he's a wonderful person. I've met him before. He's been nothing but kind. He's one of the people that was very upset when they got rid of OutQ at Sirius. I have to say, thank you. I mean,
thank you for that.
They offered him a 6-week show, but that's another story. Anyway, so.
His image, he fits a more traditional, warm, gay image.
Exactly. And Michael K. Williams as Leonard does not represent that same thing. Same as the actor that played Cyrus in Scandal.
You mess with his best friend on Happen Later,
you're out.
He will knock you out.
You're not playing. You know,
he was a tough black man, a tough black gay man on Happen Later.
You know, and but then you think about like the guy in Scandal that played Cyrus all those years. He never got any kind of acknowledgement because he was playing this sinister, dastardly, awful version of a gay man. But it's like one of the things that I feel that we don't recognize, and that's something that's very true with even within us and our black community too, is that we don't recognize that everybody's not the same. And there's room for all of us to be in that same conversation. We don't say anything about the villainous women and the villainous white men or the villainous white actors and actresses that play those terrible, awful human beings and those things. And they still get heralded for their performance as, you know, the awful and terrible, dastardly so-and-so. You know, they still will get they give them something because the performance is that good. And what I feel like happens is that with something like a Happen Leonard, Michael K. Williams' performance is one of those kinds of performances that just scares the shite out of people. And because they don't know how to handle it. He is not only is he black, but he's also gay. He's not no sissy. He's not so often demure.
He likes guns. He loves country music and he's a Republican.
And he's a Republican.
And we have to and this show is set in the 1980s.
Right. And by some of the standards of the way he uses his rationale, it completely makes sense to me. But the fact of the matter is that his character or the character itself doesn't get the extra representation or gets the extra notice because that's a character that some folks in GLAAD don't want people to see because they're scared of that. They would rather you see Will and Grace come back another season. They would rather you enjoy a new look at Queer Eye. They would rather you, and I'm not going to say it to be shady, but you'll understand what I mean when I'm talking about it in terms of what it represents. But you know, they love the Andy Cohen who's the other queen?
The Real Housewives.
The Real Housewives. Like those kinds of representations are the things that make the rest of those people that are making decisions feel comfortable. They can't handle. They can't handle this.
The new Queer Eye quintet,
mm-hmm.
They must have a terrific publicist.
They got a fabulous publicist. They went from nobodies to GLAAD Award winners, honey.
I saw one article where one of them was referred to as a legend, and I went, I had never heard of this man. Every show, they're in the car and they're all talking at the same time. They're flapping their hands around like they're auditioning for Children of a Lesser God. And what I said before is, if I was in a car with a bunch of queens who were talking that much, I would have gone Lady Bird. Just open the car door and let try me to out. Roll right out.
Just let me be, please.
But apparently, it's what people are loving now.
Well... And I don't even necessarily think that it's that they're loving it. It's just that that's all they're being told to see, and that's all they're being told to look at, and that's all they're being expected to accept as entertainment. That's all they're being told. When you're talking about how these representations, these moments, these things, why they're not there and how they're not there, and you know, it all boils down to what people are being fed and what people are being told is acceptable or interesting or what they should be looking at and what they think about looking at. And they get pushed out of the way because it's easier to not think. It's like it's easier to put you know, put a Queer Eye in front of someone and say, hey, this is how you should accept the gay people, or put Will and Grace in front of them. This is a great way to accept gay people. And look at the RuPaul Drag Race. Don't you love those queens? Those queens are fierce, aren't they? That's how you need to be fierce, live fierce, be fierce. Yeah. That is what is considered the palatable, money-making things that can be mass-produced in a way that people won't care. I mean, it's like, it is incumbent upon you and me and folks like us to try to remind as many people as we can about shows like Happen, Leonard. It's up for us to remind people that, you know, even though you may have loved you some Black Panther Wakanda, maybe you should take a chance and look at Luke Cage on Netflix. There's another one that's on Netflix, because I have loved
Alfre Woodard for decades, well, honey, and I have heard nothing but raves about her performance.
This season two, she's turning it out.
I don't know if she's been nominated for an Emmy, but your friend and mine, comedian actor Anthony DeVito, said she should be nominated for an Emmy.
Mm-hmm. She's giving some serious, like, you know, it's the when she came on, not Alexis Carrington Colby, Dominique Devereaux gone bad. She's giving you like a Diane Carroll gone bad / cougar. She's everything and not fearful and just using all kinds of language. And she just kills me. She's killing me because she's just like, you know, she's having like the Glenn Close chew up the scenes every time she's in it moment. Because she's fierce. She's giving you fierceness like that. So, you know, but again, that's a whole other look at Black folk. Because, you know, we love us some Wakanda because that was fabulous and fantastical and wonderful. But Luke Cage also goes into this kind of like, oh, he's like in Manhattan and Harlem. Uh-huh. And there's Black folks everywhere and Black folks doing things to other kinds of Black folks. And it's opening up that door. And as again, and here's something I know you're going to get me with this, but it's the truth. All of these things that we're trying to do and say, like, they're only being ushered by the people who are not necessarily the biggest allies to those specific communities, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the only way that we're going to get any kind of extra success is like, you know, women's rights are not going to get really done and happen in a way that's going to work until men really work with women to make it happen. You know, Black, we ain't gonna get everything we want unless we start really working better with whites and other folks. You know, Latinos, it's the same thing. We have to work better with everyone else. Whites, y'all got to work with everybody because y'all are like the damn.
That's true.
You know, everybody else know how to get along with everybody else, but we have to work harder to get along with you all sometimes because some of y'all are so hard headed, and that's all right. It's all love when it's all said and done. But it's sort of like it is incumbent upon the allies to be the reason how other things are going to become more in the light.
Right.
And it's like, and it's going to take, like I said, it would take just one person who's may not necessarily be Black or of color to say something really nice about what we do when we're here, or say something really fabulous about me and my podcast to just the right person. And all of the sudden the interest will turn. You know what I mean? It's like,
it would be like, you know, it would be your Viola Davis, Meryl Streep moment.
Exactly. It would be the same, you know, if it just takes that one person. And the thing is that if we look at it from the place of as a community, really, if we want to play the community card, but like if we do that with each other, it's like it would be so much more helpful and so much more advantageous.
It would be.
Like,
but how in our community, how many men of our age are like myself? Had a partner, the partner passed away, you know, you're trying to help your family and get a career, and you're older, you're fine, you're glad you'd be here, but it's like, come on, you're not built like Ricky Martin, but you would like to go out, but you just feel invisible now within your community. And I think that a show like Queer Eye could address that, because if you look at them, they're all pretty young and they're all slim. You know?
Well, it's like, you know, it is, again,
all helping the straight people
be more fabulous because they need it. That's what they're saying. They need it more than, you know, because for us, the thing would be like, well, we just need to go to the gym and we need to just stop eating carbs and stop being ridiculous. But they need to have a whole psychological profile to understand why. why they are the way they are. I'm just saying. It's like, you know, the allies have to help the others, you know. So I guess in this way, this is, you know, what they're doing for the rest of America. I don't know. I just wish that people would allow themselves to open their minds to the fact that there are others. And so that way, you know, we can, we can watch Will and Grace, and we can watch some of these other shows that keep, you know, that they keep trying. Like, there's a show that's on NBC now, Champions or something like that, with the young gay kid. It's Mindy Kaling's.
It's been canceled.
Yeah.
It's been canceled.
Yeah.
You know what? And bless his heart, the gay kid was too much.
He was too much. But
he was too much.
It's like Joe Dallas is like, God,
I mean,
damn.
I know what they were trying to do, that every time he opened his mouth, confetti and pearls popped out.
It's, well, you know, and again, there are young kids out there, they probably did get their little life from that. But I like the one, the ABC one, the O'Neills, to me was a much better version
that
of that conversation.
I love that show. The real O'Neills should still be on.
It should still be on. But I mean, if we're going to allow that, and then again, where is the support for that show? You know, I liked it. I talked about it. I got to actually interview Martha Plimpton, and we had a great conversation about the show. So, like, you know, I tried.
Oh,
but, you know. But it's the Catholic League hated that show.
There are people that they don't listen to us. Sometimes they don't listen to us. You know, we talked about this in a previous podcast about the need for diversity and inclusion, you know, in film criticism, mm-hmm. entertainment reporters, that sort of thing. Because we people of color, people like you and me, we see a talent, and we're going to want people to know about that talent, especially when we know that the talent is also a person of color,
right,
who may not be getting publicity. So, in my career, you know, in my TV news days, I would pitch people, and the white boss would say, "Well, no one knows who they are." That is the point.
That is the point.
Here are three people that I pitched to do features on who I knew when they were in New York, and I went, "You know, for one of my 3-minute segments, let me have this person on." No one knows who they are. Okay, so they passed on Thomas Gibson, who went out to L.A. and did a lot of TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron Manheim went out to LA, did a lot of TV shows. Uh-huh. And then I had been cast in a one-act play that was written by this whiz of a guy who, fortunately for him, had to leave because he got a job in LA. Alan Ball. Alan Ball, who won the Oscar for writing American Beauty, and then went on and gave us True Blood.
Uh-huh.
And, you know,
to, Banshee.
You know, but
yeah.
No one knows who they are. No. So, and the point of what I want to make is, I will see talent that I like. Let me put a spotlight on this person.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I had married friends. One was a school teacher. They were in New York, and we went to see Russell Simmons' Def Jam Poetry. Because I knew the school teacher wife would really dig it. Mm-hmm. And there was this guy in the show that the audience loved. And his name was Lemon Anderson. And he was just terrific. So after the show, we saw him on the street. And so here you are, three middle-aged people. We've got to tell this guy how wonderful he was in the show. So he went up, and we go to say, "Excuse me, we saw you." He turned around. I swear to God, I'm not lying. He turned around, and this is what he said. "Bobby Rivers." Did I tell you the story?
No, you didn't.
Okay. And I went, "How do you know who I am?" He said, "Do you remember when you did a live shot for Good Day New York with this community center in the Bronx?" And I went, "Yeah." And he said, "And there was a guy doing slam poetry, and you told the anchor, 'I don't want to do the funny bit you had planned for me. I want to put the camera on him because I think he's good.'" I went, "Oh my God." And he said, "That was me." He said, you saw me during the commercial breaks. You thought I was talented. You put me on. And instead of you getting the laugh for this bit that they wanted you to do, you let me do my slam poetry." And I said, "Well, then what happened?" He went, "Russell Simmons happened to be watching the show."
Wow.
And he was putting together the show for Broadway. And he contacted the center. And the next thing I know, I'm in a Broadway show.
Wow.
And He has since gone on to do 3 movies with Spike Lee. And wow. He's writing, he's screenwriting, he's been around the world, and he's and I went, and he thanked me. He said, this happened because you put me, he said, what are the odds? He said, I'm a guy who did time. I never expected someone who was going to put me on TV, and now look at the life I got. And then I said, I've got to go to the bar. I need a drink.
That's great for you.
But yes. Yeah, but then he's trying to work out.
I'm so happy for you.
I'm so happy for fantastic. You. Meanwhile, I'm wearing a pair of Baby Jane Hudson slippers sloshing around the room.
When is it going to be my turn?
And okay, so the last time, one of the last times this happened, I was doing a show. And this is not on Netflix, but you can find it online. It is brutally, savagely, brilliantly funny. And it's called CSA, the Confederate States of America.
Oh, no.
Have you ever seen this?
Is that the one that they were going to do like on Showtime or something?
It was on IFC. And the whole thing is, it's like a British Ken Burns documentary done on the history of America. But America, it's an America in which the South won the Civil War.
God.
So everything has an end to the commercials, the commercials, the identification. It is the writing. I'm telling you this. It's like the movie Zelig meets the old Dave Chappelle show. Ooh. If Woody Allen or Quentin Tarantino had written that mockumentary, they would have been nominated for Oscars. So I'm seeing it, and you know what? It's timely now. Now that we're in the Mango Mussolini years, you know, the Trump era, you know, you watch this again. You watch because it's, and if you know showbiz, it's also funny in the accuracy because they do Birth of a D.W. Griffith movie, if the South had won, but it has the exact look and lettering of The Birth of a Nation.
Oh my! And
right, but in that, because the South has won, the controversy was, it's Abraham Lincoln trying to escape in the underground tunnel.
Oh, I can't.
And okay, so the man who wrote and directed it is a professor, a college professor. He teaches at the University of Kansas. I contacted him. I said, I'm on a show. I would love you to maybe like do, I know you're in Kansas, but do like a 5-minute phoner interview. Mm-hmm. I want to take it to the star of the show. No. Well, no one knows who he is. I know no one knows who he is, but I really think that this is a brilliant mockumentary. And what can it hurt to give him some attention? He's a, no. And he was so grateful to me that I tried.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this year, he won the Grand Prix Award at the Cannes Film Festival.
For?
Okay, there's a movie coming out. That there are 3 big films from Black talent and featuring Black talent this summer. There's Sorry to Bother You.
Right, that's out now.
Blind Spotting.
I don't know this one.
It's just Blind Spotting. It's set in Oakland. It's set in Oakland. It stars Devon.
David Diggs. Yeah, right. Yes. And the other girl from Hamilton.
It's getting like Oscar reviews. And the same applies for Black Klansman.
Yes. That's Spike Lee, isn't it? The Black right. Klansman? Yes.
Right. Well, Kevin Wilmot, who wrote and directed CSA, the Confederate States of America, co-wrote Black Klansman with Spike Lee.
Yeah.
Which got a standing ovation at the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah.
But, you know, back in 2007... No one knows who he is. You can't put him on the air. Okay.
Doesn't that just annoy the shit out of you?
Yes, it does.
You know, and that's the good thing about, at least with my podcast here with you and then the one that I do with myself for the theater. It's like, at least with the theater, when I had someone ask me the other day, would I be interested in interviewing him? He's a playwright that no one knows a lot about. And I said to him, I said, well, why wouldn't I want to interview you? You're a playwright. It's like, there's so many people that are listening that want to write a play, like would love to know what it's like to be a struggling playwright in New York City and what that means. And that has a whole character and a conversation that they wouldn't get sitting at their house in Kansas. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yes, I do. Yeah.
Who knows what this guy's going to, he's got several plays that are really fabulous and interested. And, you know, there's people that are looking. It's like, so to talk to him now would be great for both of us. But at the same time, it's like 5 years from now, who knows when he's getting his Tony. That's how I feel like about the director.
You never know what's going to happen with these people.
Like, I feel like this.
WNBC turned down the chance for me to talk to Alan Ball for like 4 minutes. Now he's got an Oscar and no time because he's so busy.
Yeah. And that's what happens. You know, when they become something after the fact, then people go, did you have a relationship with such and such? Yeah, I sure did. It's like, but when nobody knew who he was and I tried to get him on here, y'all didn't want to talk to him. Guess what? He don't return my phone calls.
And I miss that kind of work. Look, I would love to be working again, and I love entertaining, but I really love introducing the public to talent that they should know and have never heard of. I love doing
It's the best. It's the best.
Right? Listen, before we get out of here and get a cocktail, let's recap what we saw on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I went back down memory lane and saw the early specials. The Barbra Streisand specials from CBS in the 1960s. Brilliant. Brilliant. They hold up.
Wow.
And W. Kamau Bell, Prep School Negro, you want to laugh? You will laugh watching that.
Do not forget Hap and Leonard, honey, seasons 1 through 3.
Watch all of them. Excellent acting, excellent writing.
You know what? And if Netflix, if y'all listening, and you should be because we tagged you in the damn thing, y'all need to get on the stick and y'all need to pick up Bad Chili. You need to pick up the rest of these books in this series, an option to do them. Even if you do them as these six, you can get them in 6 episodes, I'm sure. If you, with a good writer, you can skim down each book down to 6 episodes, and you can make yourself a cute mint on a really good series. And people are going to, I'm telling you, people are going to go nuts for this. Be brave in a way that Sundance couldn't do, because it's going to force people to have to look at that stuff differently. And I'm telling you, that's what we need. That's exactly what we need. I'm sorry. Dang
it. I totally agree. Mm. We done?
I think we are, but make sure they can find... You know what, Bobby? They need to write to you, Mocha, M-O-C-H-A-A, with BobbyRivers@gmail.com. Send him your little... If you got a question about film or TV, Bobby is the man for you, I'm telling you. And not to mention, he's all over Mr. Twitter as Bobby Rivers TV. Make sure that
thank you
send...
Thank you so much.
I'm just saying. They got to know how to find you. And then, of course, you know, don't forget us.
Did you mention your podcast already?
Yes. Keep Crossing the Curtain Ball. Come on now. We're all in this together.
Well, nothing but a cosmopolitan. Hello. Deal.
And still, we're going to make up a recipe for this mango Mussolini before we're done. Let's consult a few people. I knew a few, what are they called now? They're not bartenders. They're called mixologists.
Mixologists.
I know a perfect one, Miss Heather B. She'll do it for us. I love it. All right, my darling.
All right. We're out of here. Thanks for listening, folks.
Bye, y'all.
Mocha.